That's where I'd be getting out. I'm personally trying to take it. It's not, you know, if you can put a strategy together there and try to hold for a breakout. Nothing wrong with that. Personally, my way of doing it, the way I teach of it most of the time, is to take the single direct move. Don't stick around for the congestion. Yeah. Yeah, this would be my exit. No.
If that was a one-day chart instead of a six-month chart, that's the way you swing trade from the data.
I believe I agree with you, but I'm not sure. Right. Yeah, I trade it the same way. I trade it the same way. Yeah.
But that would be the resistance because that you would get out either way, whether it's day trading or week trading, whatever.
Now, you know, there's different kinds of resistance, and again, you learn to read it the same way as I went to survival school back in 1983, and it was a tracking school. It was Apache tracking school. It was taught out in New Jersey, Western New Jersey, at a little farm. And one of the things you learn to do is to read. You read the tracks. And the guy who ran the place was amazing. He could look at a bunch of animal tracks in the ground. He'd say, oh, yeah, this type of animal came over here and taunted this animal. The other animal came up and attacked them this way and this way, and they fought over here, came back here. This one won, went that way. That one lost, went that way. All from animal tracks. No two price charts are alike. They always provide their information in different ways. You use universal principles to try to understand the particular circumstances to make a reasoned determination, a reasoned judgment of what you want to do in that situation. Now, just to mess with the brain a little bit, I'd probably have a different reaction to this point if this particular candlestick didn't look as ugly as it did. See, that made that high worse because of that. See that thing? That has a meaning to me as opposed to, oh, what's the price where that doesn't have, maybe this little thing right here. That has a meaning to me. That's a big, big, opened up, try to go higher, turn around and drop like a rock. I'm looking at the next lower time frame of that thing through the candlesticks and saying, this isn't just resistance right here. These are people who are hurt. So, yeah, they've sat on this thing for 2 months. Guess what? This is their first chance to act like good investors and get out whole. You know, so, I mean, there's little quirks and stuff to it. Then, of course, you know, I hate to say it, but there is tiny little cup and handle there, not much of one. Sometimes cup and handles will form. It's almost like the same principles of cup and handle. A lot of times you'll see congestion form right at an old high, which is either bullish or bearish, depending on how it forms in that next lower time frame. Let's go to the next slide. Okay. Importance of time frame. If you're you're trading, I hope I get this right. I've explained this before, and I've explained it just terribly. If you're trading off of this larger chart, off of the daily chart here, and your time frame's long enough, you're going to see this breakout. You're going to buy here, and it's probably never going to exceed your risk tolerance. And this actually went up to new highs, if I recall. It went up. You got a nice gain out of it. If you were a day trader, though, and you turn around and try to buy into this thing for a two or three day hold, you got burned. What you see at the end of the day, the position trader sees this breakout at the end of the day. The intraday trader sees the breakout when it happens. Where you're looking at any particular time is going to determine part of what your strategy is. If you're looking at the end of the day, the profit's already gone up to this point. The move's mostly gone. If you try to get in the next morning, you bought into this little gap over here. But if you were looking at the same chart but were able to watch the market in real time, you were able to respond to this point rather than this point. You had a day's advantage by being able to watch the market in that closer time frame. Many of you don't have that ability to do that. You're stuck with the information. Now, here's a nice breakout point. What do I do now? And let's go back to the principle. Usually by the time you see a breakout, it's too late. You need to wait. If you lose it, if you miss it, you miss it. What you're looking for when you see a breakout is when everybody else starts to sell off into a pullback. And you did have a little pullback here, whether or not that was the point that you'd be able to trade or not, to come all the way back to this line. The information you look at determines your strategy. If you see something after it happens, chances are you're too late, or your risk is already increased to the point where you have to think twice. Let's change slides. Oh, first and last hours, if I recall. First hour, last hour, first hour, last hour. This is really for all time frames, too. You know, everybody is so attracted to first hour trading, so attracted to it. Most people I know who day trade, who intraday trade in the first hour. Me, I'll look at it. I keep trying and trying and trying, but I don't understand the first hour to save my neck. There's very little predictable behavior that goes on there. What you get is price discovery. You get sharp moves in both directions very often so that somebody out there can test what the real direction is. And you have to have a strategy as part of your plan of what you're going to do in the first and last hour if you're trading down in those shorter time frames. Most of the time, it's not to buy the breakout. It's just the way it's been these days. Most of the time, it's not to buy the breakout. Just like anything else, it's very often waiting for the pullback, very often just passing on the first hour, waiting till about 60 minutes in, and then just turn off your screen and come back and see where it's at when the market's open for an hour. Same thing with the last hour. Predictability drops through the floor during the first and last hours. Unfortunately, that's where most of the positive feedback is during the day. Now, let's say that one more time because that is a conflict. Most of the market movement takes place in the first and last hour, but that's also the least predictable times of day. So it sort of messes you up because you want to capture those moves, but you want to capture them with some good prediction. My advice is to avoid the first hour completely. Or study the first hour to the point where you understand its quirks, where you understand its behavior to the point where you can reduce risk for yourself. Me personally, I can't do it. I could trade the last hour. I could trade the last 10 minutes and consistently make money doing it. I don't know why I could do that, but I can do that because I can smell the games better in the afternoon than I can in the morning. Well, most folks aren't, you know. The money's fresh in the morning. Money's fresh. Who wants to sit on their hands till the last hour? The money's fresh in the morning. That's the most, people make their worst decisions during the first hour because their pockets are full and they want to get into something. So they're willing to get into something even if the opportunity's not right because they want to be in the trade. Or if they saw something the night before, even if the morning action doesn't support what they saw the night before, they're already being guided by what they saw the night before, even though they haven't gotten the verification to support what their analysis said that time. The money's fresh. The money's really fresh. If you get, you know, there's flips to the cycle. When you get real dead mornings, the afternoons can become real active. Look at it this way. You know, people have so much money in their pockets. If it opens up to a dead money, they're going to want to, if it opens up to a dead market, they're going to want to throw it. Sometime during the day, they're going to want to throw money into the market. If it opens up and it's real volatile, it's taking money out of the market and it forces it to go into that dead zone in the middle of the day a lot of times. Me, my favorite time is right after lunch. I'm an afternoon trader. I'm just using that as an example. It'd be a little counterintuitive here. Number one, after lunch is a trending period. You know, people come back from their lunch hours. People, you know, I always think that Wall Street people are all out there tipping, you know. So they're coming back and they're ready to play, hit some buttons, you know. But you also have the dead zone. You have to know your time of day. How often or how many folks in here have gotten burned by buying or selling in the lunch hour? I mean, it's just tremendous. It's so easy to get faked out during the lunch hour because the market goes to negative feedback. It doesn't make sense. And now negative feedback, I'm not necessarily talking ranges. I'm talking about it doesn't make sense. It's directionless, or it's sloppy, or it's choppy, you know? Anytime after 11:45, you got to watch yourself. You got to pay attention to the signposts of time. 2:30. 2:30 is a classic market sell-off period. You constantly see rallies that just gain momentum at 2:20, and at 2:26 they die. It's commonly recognized as a sell-off point because, can anybody take a guess? It goes back to the bond market, which is going to close at 3 o'clock. As the bond market enters the last half hour, You know, not so much in today's market. We used to be guided by the bond market a lot more than we are. We are now at certain periods in time when the bond market reaches extremes. But people wanted to get out of equities at 230 in case bonds sold off. And they knew that volatility would increase in the bond market at 230, so they jump out. And now even when bonds are dead, the market still sells off at 230 a lot of the time. Now, try to be counterintuitive. If you expect the market to sell off at 230, it doesn't. It's a sign of strength. I don't know if that makes any sense, but where you're, it's convergence, divergence. Take your expectation. You always walk into the market with an expectation. It's a Linda Rashke thing. I'll steal it from her again. She says all you have to do to trade is compare two points against each other. Compare what you're doing against a point, a price point, a time point, and you can trade. Same thing with your positions. You have an expectation. Compare the price action to your expectations. Does it converge or diverge with those expectations? You expect price to go up. It's gone down. It's diverging. What does that mean? Then you have to do some more homework and say, okay, what does it mean? Yeah. Well, there's a tendency too.
You get an automatic correction of a tendency to correct the market because the dominance of the day traders, if there's a significant.
Oh, there you go, blaming stuff on day traders.
There's a significant dominance of a position from day traders.
Well, there's another tendency too, and that's a tendency of the market to just ramp from one place to another with no warning or little warning, so that it gets to where it's going to go very quickly. And then just mess around in that range forever and ever and ever until it just tests price discovery, wears out of the system. It goes back to what we talked about trends taking up a very few number of bars compared to ranges. Well, it's so obvious these days. And it even was, remember how hard it was? It was actually very hard to make money during that big hot momentum market because the market would gap every day. And then you'd have a narrow range bar and a gap and have a narrow range bar and gap and have a narrow range bar. Well, you know, unless you were holding it overnight or holding it for a few weeks, it was tough to make money in that market unless you were really scalping it, you know, taking some of the volatility in there. And there is a tendency to go, if the market needs to get to someplace, take a look at Friday. The market needs to get to someplace. It does it immediately. Immediately. It doesn't take its time getting somewhere. It goes there. That's another reason why swing trading is so good, because you don't need that big trend to make your money. What you need to is after it gets there, you start using retracement on Fibonacci, you start looking at the moving averages and the pullbacks and the gaps, and you go and you try to pick out a point and a half out of the market, or 2 points out of the market, or half a point out of the market, get out and move on. Let's go to the next slide. Winning percentage. You have to be very, very good before you can be bad. If you have a low percentage win, you must keep your losses down. If you have a high percentage win, you can afford to take some pretty big losses. These are just three ways to get to $10,000 based on percentage win and the same number of trades. You know, if you're making money all the time, you could take those big losses because it's going right back into your pocket. But if you're not making money all the time, you need to keep that loss much, much lower. That's not even 3-to-1. That's over 4-to-1? That's very, very high reward risk ratio you have to maintain at a low percentage win. How are your percentage wins? The problem is many of you can't tell me because you don't know what your winning percentage is. How often in 10 trades do you make money 4 times, 6 times, 7 times? That's 40%, 70%. You don't know. And number two, you lie to yourself. See, we're getting into the psychological part now. You lie to yourself. You don't keep good records. You don't put in your transaction costs. You don't put in your slippage. You forget about this trade over here or forget about that trade over there. And you try to do the mental calculations of how much money you're making or losing. Very, very important to keep good records because you lie to yourself. Does everybody know? Some of us are very precise in our math. But many of us don't want to know how good or bad we're really doing. So we assume it, We estimate it, and we always estimate it in our favor. And we forget, oh, yeah, I had that 80% winning percentage except for that string of 10 bad losses I had. You know? Rationalize. There it is, rationalize. Okay. Let's flip.
I got a question.
Yeah. Throw it out. Backtesting software, I don't use it.
You know how you know
if your system works? Go and see if you made any money. Of course it gives it to you, but remember, you're still looking in your rearview mirror. And what we're talking about today is being able to adapt to what's going to happen tomorrow. The market's going to change tomorrow, and we want to be ready because the rest of the crowd is still going to be sitting with yesterday. The guys who are backtesting are still going to be using those strategies that don't work anymore. We want to go, okay, the market's right here. This is where it should go next. Or this worked for me forever and ever. Now it's not working. What do I do now? So I see everybody's doing it. Everybody knows that the market's going up. What do I do now? How do I change? How do I shift? How do I be the chameleon and shift colors, change my strategy. Stop doing momentum, start shorting. Stop shorting and start scalping. Stop scalping and start this, that, and the other thing. Having a diverse group of strategies that you can switch out as market conditions change rather than using one or two things that work sometimes and don't work sometimes. It's hard, but I'm convinced that's your only means to survival in our 21st century markets, that you have to have adaptability because the market knows you're there now. Technical analysis knows you're there. Yeah?
Alan, you've been dealing with individual stocks here in preparation for your next step. Do you also scan or review the S&P 500 or NASDAQ Composite to see how the overall market...
I watch both of those in real time.
I watch
both of those in real time, and I always know where they are. We had talked about NASDAQ working at that 600-point range day. I use a 14-day RSI on the indices to target overbought, oversold conditions. It's very, very accurate. 14-day smooth by 7, or just use a standard 14-day if you have telecharts, because you can't smooth it. It's smooth for you. And I've used that for years. Another great one. I have to pass this along, and I'll get your question in a second. Just a second. I've used a relative strength spread between the S&P 500 and NASDAQ for years in order to pick market bottoms and tops. When NASDAQ starts to turn up in terms of relative strength spread, that's usually a bottom. When the S&P starts to turn up, that's usually a top. It goes back to the flight to safety thing versus speculation. When NASDAQ starts to outperform, you don't need the spread to do it. If you use, you use your eyes and see how it's performing. When NASDAQ starts to outperform the S&P, that's when the market starts to move. That's why I was so confident in August that we were going nowhere. I didn't believe it. When the Dow starts to outperform the S&P and the NASDAQ, it's like, you might as well just go to the beach. You know, it's such a joke. Serious, what is the Dow? I'm sorry, I'm a new economy type of person. What's in it? I mean, look at the tech companies. You know, you've got the tech companies, Microsoft and Intel, but you've got such still garbage stuff in there. Not garbage, mega behemoths that are slow growth companies. And that's just pure manipulation, safety and manipulation. The market can't go to new highs with manipulation. Yeah? Well, I have a little problem because, I mean, for me, fundamentals are a hobby. I enjoy them, but I can't base their trading decisions on them. I'm a completely technical person. I'll trade things and not have a clue what they are. I do that all the time. I want to know the float. I want to know the liquidity. That's important to me, the float, you know? How many shares are out there? How fast are they turning over? What's the average volume? I want liquid stuff. I wouldn't trade CMGI until it split this last time because the float was just too low for me. I wasn't comfortable. Now, you know, after a few splits, that float goes up, you know? It gets more liquid, gets a little bit more stable.
What's your limit? Are
Ideal flow. Well, rather than pure numbers, let me just say the stock that trades on average of 3 to 5 million shares a day in a routine period, not on spikes. I trade in NASDAQ 100 stocks more than anything else. You know, but there's another piece of that, too. We haven't really, you know, in terms of level two, you can't find any island depth on stocks that are smaller than that. And that's another reason you don't trade them. If there was island depth on some of this thinner stuff, I might take a go of it. But if I can't find good participation by the ECNs, because of the way I trade, I can't really do much of anything with it. I'm afraid I might get in. No? It's the other part that really is a problem. Was there another question here? Yeah. How long have I ever kept a stock? Too long. Here's the answer. my biggest loss in the last 5 years was 10 points. How long did I hold? I have a 401k too, so I mean I try to trade those long term. You know, in terms of pure trading, I think it was 8 points, and that was held over. God, I hate to say it, I was down more than that, but I waited for the bounce. I was stuck. I learned my lesson. I haven't done that in 3 or 4 years. You know, for me personally, shortening my time frame was the best thing I ever did. Because I don't, you can hold on. If you hold on out of phase, because the market's always going to pull back and do this. Well, if you're just out of phase, you're going to always want to get out just when it's going in the wrong direction. If you come back into phase, yeah, you'll get both pieces of it. So that timing is really important. I was totally out of phase. When I was holding things, probably 2 to 3 weeks was my average back then. And I became an investor regularly. And when I stopped doing that and shortened my time frame, that stopped happening. And I don't take, I take 2-point losses now, and they hurt. They hurt. I'm not, again, I think we told somebody over lunch, my average gain, just my personal style, is about 1.5 to 2 points. My average loss is under 0.5 point. And I'm real picky. And so when I get a 2-point loss, I'm upset. And, you know, we talk about size, too. Let's go on to the next slide, and we'll talk about size, too. Size is an illusion. How many shares you buy is an illusion. Depends how far price is going to move. Let's pass to this and go to the next one. No, we're going, oh, I see why. We're going the wrong way. You know, no matter how right you are, let's just say that this little piece wasn't here. Talk about being right. The need to be right is greater than almost any other need. No matter how well something pulls back to support, it could go through it. No matter how sweet the gap is, it could go through it. No matter how good the chart looks, it could go in the other direction. You have no choice but to have a plan on what to do if that happens. On the best situation, on the most convergent situation where even the price, everything's lining up, everything's perfect, everything's beautiful, then it turns against you, and wait, when it comes back to this point, it's got to stop. And then when it doesn't stop, well, it's got to stop. You have to have a fail-safe solution to every trade. If you don't, you become an investor right back where we were just talking about a couple minutes ago. Not everything does what it's supposed to do, especially now. You know, I would have thought, that's an awfully nice double top there, at least in that little time frame. I would have thought we would have gotten more than that little teensy-weensy right there. See, that's actually a bounce. Yeah, if you're a nice day trader, that was the big bounce you got from this. How many bars here? About 20, 25 bars of support you got. An afternoon. Now you were thinking, oh, good, I'll buy this thing about 76 and I'll get about 6 points out of it. Well, you know, it had other plans. Do you have a flat stop loss, a fail-safe solution? What happens when it doesn't do what you think it should do? Part of that is the ability to realize when this thing breaks down, it causes a gap, you want to get in short. One of your solutions is to go in the other direction. Not necessarily, but it's one of your possible strategies is to switch gears real fast. Of course, that's when the market reverses on you and goes back and does what it's supposed to do. All right, let's switch. Trading rules. Some of us have to write them down. Most of us have to write them down, especially when you're early trading journals, all this other jazz. Early in the game, you have to do it. You have to do it. The bottom line is, if you haven't been doing this for 5 years or more, you don't know what you're going to be doing 5 years from now. If you haven't been doing this 5 years or more, you're not sure what kind of trader you want to be yet. It may take you that long to decide what you're really comfortable with, because you're going to try different things, you're not going to like your return, you're going to try something else, you're going to stay in the game, you're going to use risk management, but you're going to have to constantly revise what it is you're trying to do until you align who you are with the stocks that you're trading. And one way to do that is to make up rules. What am I going to do? What am I not going to do? What am I looking for? What size stocks? How long am I holding? What are my exit, entry, and filtering rules? When am I going to stay out of the market? Then be prepared to find all those situations where you want to break them. I think one of the best ways, and it may be frustrating, but probably the best way to deal with that, because you're always going to want to break your rules because you can see a situation that's just perfect, is never break that rule when you see that perfect situation. But then at the end of the day, decide if you want to change your rule so that the next time it comes along, you have a better response. This way, you don't. Malleable rules are meant to be broken, you know? But I think, of course, I got to do it in my head. Some of you can do it in your head. You know what it is you want to do. If you trust yourself, fine. Some folks need to see it so they can go back and look at themselves and go, what was I thinking? You know? And of course, that happens to everybody. I don't know if we have a good, I'm trying to switch slides with this. Go ahead and switch slides. I don't know if we have a good, click. Okay, we click off of that. Next. Okay. I'll talk about this in a second. I just want to mention something about short sales. Does everybody here short? Ooh. Think about that. Now, you have, is that a yes, you short?
No, I was going to ask you, was that bottom line, how did you play the market on Friday when you saw Thursday?
I was packing to come to Florida.
Were you short? Did you short?
I was short Intel at 3:30 on Thursday, and I closed my position out.
Yeah, beautiful.
Let's just say my time is pretty lousy. But, you got to think about short. Now, you just revealed the truth. You have a long side bias, which everybody knows there's a long side bias in the market. Because probably you're primarily momentum traders. Momentum traders primarily go long in the year 2000. But you realize that's the wrong answer. You got to divide that up a little bit. Number one, if you're at a discount broker, you've got some special issues. It's a bigger problem. You're a pain in the neck. I was at Brown & Company for years, and then one of the best trading brokerages around that had a reputation in the early 90s, but you wanted to short something. Well, I have to talk to Bernie in the room to see what the inventory is. We'll get back to you. Well, you can't trade. You can't sell short that way, you know. Bernie call you back in a half hour. Okay, we'll give you 100 shares, you know. You can't do that. If you're with a direct access broker using ECNs, you have no excuses. You have no excuses. Short sales are not the same as going long, okay? They're not. You can't just flip a stock chart upside down and say, I'm just going to trade it backwards. The market doesn't work that way. It forms similar patterns, but the psychology is different. Fear-driven price change is different from greed-driven price change. Folks like you tend to hold stocks up a lot longer than they should. And so when something drops, it doesn't go straight down. You see the drop and want to sell it short, it just hangs there forever because there's always true believers around. That's part of 20 years of a bull market or 18 years of a bull market. But prices will eventually go down. You need to build that skill up because part of what you have to do in adapting is shift gears and sell short. Now, if you're in an ECN, trading with an ECN, it's easy as pie, and I presume you know that. All you do is put in an order a 16th of a point above the bid, and you'll get filled if it's a liquid market and the market's not collapsing on you. You'll get filled real, real fast. You can't beat out the investor mentality out. Yeah, go long 80% of the time. But remember, your survival depends on building new skills as the years go on. Because everybody's sitting around and sitting there with their pencil and paper too, and they're learning new things. And they're going to be applying those new things. So it's up to you to stay one step ahead of them. And look at the advantage. Look at the advantage of selling short when so many few people in the room are doing it. Which is the crowd in this room? The people who are selling short or the people who are going long? There's a tremendous advantage. Your timing has to be better. Your timing has to be better. Now, you're going to do it all wrong. Many of you are going to do it all wrong. I'm not being accusatory. You're going to do it wrong because You're going to go and sell short at the bottom of a sell-off and get creamed. Short squeezes are really, really vicious. You need to learn to sell short into the top of a short squeeze. You need to sell short at the top of a short squeeze. You wait. Here we are again, stepping behind the crowd. Price drops down. All of a sudden, there's a great motivation to just out of nowhere pull that market straight up again. Sit back, watch the crowd get clobbered. Most of those folks are folks who have sold short. Watch some weak investors come in, pull up price a little bit more. Watch that short squeeze in the next lower time dimension for a little double top, or a reversal candlestick, or a movement into a Fibonacci or a moving average. Then as soon as the tape dies down, get the heck on board. Generally, markets will drop like a rock after short squeezes because there's nothing to hold them up anymore. And the intent was initially to take the market lower. It's just that nobody was in a hurry, so they stopped for a friendly little short squeeze before they went on to their thing. Going back to this profit and discomfort being side by side, this is a perfect example. It's very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable, because you see all those people buying. And your strategy is, I'm gonna sell this short. Very uncomfortable. You don't want to sell short into a moving market. That's not the same as a short squeeze. You want to see the market start to die out. Now, you see it with candles, you can see it with the tape. It requires a little bit of skill, but using your technical indicators, that's where you're going to pick your points to watch for that occurring. Okay, just about two more minutes, and we'll take another break. Bulls live above the 200-day moving average. Bears live below. You could sell short in here. You can go long in here, but you want the trends that you're trading to be supporting you. Remember, the sellers emerge with great consistency down here. Buyers emerge with great consistency up here at key turning points, large moving averages, at big highs, at big lows. Next slide. These are probably all short sales. Yeah, short sales. Pullbacks, you have a break of a double top. You're selling short the first pullback into the double top. The market breaks into a first failure. Then you start, it doesn't always work. You're selling the next pullback into resistance. Market breaks lower. Now this time, it doesn't work, just so you know. It doesn't always work. You need good risk control. Here the market gaps right where it's supposed to gap. Take out that shadow right there and jump higher. Great buy signal, something pops back into support. And you have that small hammer that shows, yeah, got back to your support, no short. But you might have been short. There's no doubt. Using the landscape, again, to find resistance points. A lot of these things are squeezes. This looks like a pretty good squeeze point. What do squeezes look like? They look like these, right? That's what I'm looking for. Big drop, V bottoms type things. Okay, I think one more slide, and then we'll take a break, I believe. Next slide, not this one. Anyway, parallel price channels are great places to sell short. Next one, we'll see if there's any more. Carriage candlestick, buy, sell, buy, sell. One more. This one. Who are you? This is a great place for this. It's a great place for this. You know, who comes out when you're trading? I find out I'm more self-destructive than I thought I was when I started trading. I found when I was in a bad mood, I made bad decisions. I found out that when I was fighting with my wife, my kids, or my dog, I made bad decisions. I found out that trading was a good place for me to hurt myself and make me feel worse. One of the most important things, too, in terms of being a saint rather than a sinner, is when you make a mistake, what you do over the next few minutes or days may determine your fate. In other words, you make a bad decision emotionally, you buy the wrong thing because you just want to get in, you hit that enter button, and you're there and the stock turns against you. You have the opportunity to remedy your errors, to have your sins completely forgive because you have to take your loss. But when your boat gets out in the storm here, you've got to guide it back into the harbor. So you have two points. Number one is don't make it in the first place a bad decision. But when you do, and you realize you do, you have the opportunity to minimize the damage. And that's one of your biggest responsibilities as a trader, because you're always going to do real bad, lousy things. Real messed up things because you lost focus, you lost concentration.